guess the purpose of the Shia is to give some sort of sense somehow in a Gemara about the Mazolus and the Shos and so on. It's something that for us it's like really alien, and just to try to understand how to work and how it structures. So I guess we'll try to give some sort of a way how to approach this Gemara specifically, and then how to approach it, and in general, it would be a little bit of a window for certain types of agadatas. Let's first start with a passion of Torah. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up Bryas HaOlam, he set it up each day with something, with a different different inyan that was Nivra. If we take a look at it, it's not exactly what you would expect in terms of a physical world and the needs of a physical world. It's not exactly structured that way. For instance, we start with light, which is interesting. When we come to the fourth day, it says, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Me'oros Birkei HaShamayim. Now, the first thing that's a little bit interesting to note is, one would expect the inanimate stuff should come first. So, or in the beginning, okay, maybe, Mayim Lemoyim, Yikavu HaMayim, and then the Shemesh, and so on. After that, you should have the grass and all the other stuff, especially since grass needs sun. I mean, that's a major component of a grass cycle, is the sun. We don't have it that way. It says, Yehi Me'oros Birkei HaShamayim, Lehavdil Bein Hayom Vein Halayla. There should be light. We already had light. So light in terms of needs for purpose of reading, for purpose of heat, that seems to be included in the first light that was there already. It says Yehi Me'oros instead of Or. You know, the light shall be associated with specific bodies. First of all, Lehavdil Bein Hayom Vein Halayla. So that we have two entities, day and night, vehoyu, and these ma'oros should be la'osos, there should be a way of a sign, l'mo'adim, l'yomim, l'shanim. So the purpose of setting up a whole system of planets, sun, and so on, is sort of a way of imposing a certain structure on our world. The benefits, kind of the functional benefits of heat and light and so on, could have been done, pardon the pun, like, sorry, by indirect lighting, which was the first day. The fact that there are certain entities there means that they really act as something else. They act to be mavdil to yom and laila, and osos, mo'adim, yomim, and shanim. So the primary function of these entities are to signal, to put a certain chronological structure to the world, in expressed in yomim, mo'adim, shanim. Now let's get a little bit of an understanding of how we look at it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us into this world. We have a physical earth underneath our feet, which is really possibly completely mastered by man. We're joined to do that. It says, "Nasa Adam v'yirdu b'dgas hayom b'ofa shemay behima b'chol aretz chaim shal aretz." So, or like it says, the pasuk in Tehillim, "Kol shat hatach raglov." We have a huge world that we really can balabativa over. It's meant to be under mastery, and we have the ability to do it. And we're surrounded by a huge world that we don't really have the ability to do anything with it, but it sort of overwhelms us. So we are masters of a giant world, and we are subject of a big, huge entity, and that's everything that we see that surrounds us. Another very important kind of klal in understanding our perspective and in the world and Torah, we are unabashedly anthropocentric believers. The world was created for man, and it was created to serve man, and it revolves around man. And it doesn't mean man is automatically good, like it says in Chazal. Either we can tell him Yitush Kadamcha, or he's greater than the Elyonim. It's not an automatic statement that men are great, but the Tachlis of the Bria was man. So there's nothing, if we ask ourselves, why are there trillions of stars and worlds that really, really have no Tachlis? Their Tachlis is for us, whether we know it or understand or not, but that's the way we see it, and that's the way we understand it. So there are two. There's one, the earth, the tachas of the earth, is to bring out man's potential, physically and ruchniyistic, and then the purpose of the world that surrounds a person is to give a person certain sense that is connected to something higher. It's emotional. A person looks around and he says, who am I? Yes, you know, I've climbed the highest mountains and I've mastered huge countries, but I'm a speck in this huge world. There is something above me. There's something that surrounds me. And there's a sense that there's something that controls me and my life. That's, you know, whenever we speak of Yiras Shemayim, we always use the term Shemayim. The Shemayim, that's the physical Shemayim, is kind of the lowest expression of something above me, around me, and really directing my life. For instance, let's take it on a lower level. I can plow the fields, I can grow crops, I can pull out weeds, I can make fences. But summer and winter and spring and fall have nothing to do with me. No one asked me any shilas on that one. I can control the land, I can't control the weather. So I am servant to the weather, master over the land. And so on. The moon comes, the moon creates tides. You know, that we see. That's not a, you know, that's the moon makes, you know, it lifts up waters, lowers waters. The sun brings day and brings night, and day and night is a very, it's a cycle in nature. In animals and plants and humans are really affected by it in something above them. So in the world that we are, the higher world, meaning the physically higher world, anything above the earth and around the earth, is meant to convey to us the sense of otherness that is greater than us. It also has real hashpa. The sun has a very clear hashpa on the world. Day and night have hashpa, the moon has hashpa, and so on. Exactly how strong is that hashpa? So we see that, let's leave the physical world out for a second, and let's take a look a little bit at the metzias in terms of hashkach on a personal level. A person goes through life, and we believe that you have bechira, and the bechira is yours to choose every step of the way. We're also aware of some other things that we have no bechira. The moment we're born, we're given a list of who we are, what we are, what our IQ is, what talents we have, what talents we're missing, a general character type, apathetic, passionate, etc., etc. The parents that we have, the place that we're born, we also detect a certain pattern in life. Some people seem to have a long trail of hardships in their life from beginning till the end. Some people seem to be matzliach at whatever they do. Some people matzliach at nothing that they do. So we seem to detect there are certain things that we sense are feedbacks of tov and ra, And there's certain things that this person just seems, just doesn't seem, nothing seems to go his way. The Gemara points it out. The Gemara says, Rav and Mechista both were tremendous people, both big tzaddikim. Gemara Shabbos, the early, and yet one of them made 60 weddings, one of them buried 60 children, one of them fed his goats, ate delicacies, and one of them couldn't have two meals a day. A very, very tragic contrast between two giants. The Hezbo can't lie in a feedback of what is happening to him, but rather it's something that's sort of that piece of the puzzle is predestined. What you do with it, that's Bechira. Your reward in Olam Haba is certainly Tolim Bechira. But your course of life that you're going to go through, that seems to have been preset. So if we're looking to find the place where we would find some sort of hint, some sort of sense at the things that were preset, we would have to look upwards. Just like any time when I want to know why my crops are doing well or not doing well. So the first question is, well, if you nap till 12 o'clock every day and then you go down for a 2-hour brunch, your crops aren't going to do terribly well. That's no surprise. But then there's some other things. There's rain, there's heat, there are things of that nature. The things that are out of my control come from Lamala. That's where there's this whole world of tzvaos and mazolos, which means basically the forces above us that are seemed to control our destiny instead of the other way around. Now, that there is such a metzias is clear. I mean, that the Gemara calls it mazel. And the Gemara says, Hakol Tolei B'Mazel, Chutz, and so on. Everything's over with Chusim and Mazalas and different Gemaras. I don't want to go into that because that's its own topic. But certainly there are things that are preset. It stands to reason that we will find either signs of it or causes of it expressed in that medium. Now, it doesn't say it anywhere. In other words, that's something the early nations believed in very, very powerfully so. A part of it was because they did not believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the only higher elements that they could believe in were mazalos. That was the highest visible element. But it's very possible that there is a reality either in terms of association, or is it, you know, it could be a sign, it could be a cause. The moon causes certain physical changes in the world. It tides because of the attraction. It was thought that it could cause mental health, a lack of it, dark periods versus sunlight. Some of them are a mixture of physical effects of like sun and this and that. Maybe not. But Al Kaponim, that was an easy belief for Masolam, and that's why they were called Ovdei Kochavim Umazolos. They worshipped it, because that was to them God. We understand that there may be truth in it, if it can be proven, just like we look at science, except that the one thing we argue vehemently is that it's not the ultimate cause. It could, at best, it could be an intermediate cause, sort of HaKadosh Baruch Hu putting X, Y, or Z into place to cause different things, just like on the physical level, there's cause and effects that are physical, but we look at it as the Yad of Hashgacha. Or it could be the signs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does everything with a sign. So, for instance, he planted Shabbos in the world, the sun sets Shabbos. So the Ruchnis, the school of Shabbos, is set by cycles of sun. He planted Yom Tovim, and that's set with a somewhat erratic cycle of a moon. Those are Mo'adim. He planted a very physical cycle, and that's Shanim, and that's done by the sun. So the Mazolos, certainly some of the Mazolos, seem to have in us are definitely there for the reason to mark certain things. So even though it's hard to understand why X amount of cycles of the moon should create Eiris of Pesach, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu linked it that way. And when Bezdin sees the moon at the right Kufa, in the right place, it's Pesach now. So there's a linkage. Either one can look at it as HaKadosh Baruch Hu causes that to cause certain realities in Ashpa, or it's just a sign. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tags it with certain signs for us. So if we look up, so we're looking, the world of observing those forces of Kochavim, Azals, and so on, and is something that had been, you know, there are occasionally people that, you know, they'll claim that the certain cycles of solar flare-ups cause certain changes or not. I don't know, you know, it doesn't become, it's not terribly well established, but be it as it may, we take a look at this world of Kochavim Azals, and we understand it that these are signals that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has that we can use to understand somewhat the world of Mazalos. Now let's understand two things about it. First of all, the Ramchal says, we've seen the Akedah occasion on Shabbos. Ramchal is the one who speaks about it Mefurish. The Ramchal says in Das Tvunis, speaks about it on a whole bunch of places clumped together, that our life, what makes it so hard to see Yad Hashem is because our life, what happens to us is a combination of hashkacha and mazel. Hashkacha means the feedback for our maisim. So certain things I have to say, the reason why this thing happened to me is, it's a reminder that I'm not doing this well. And the reason why certain other things happen is because of mazel. Mazel, he explains, it's the same concept. He explains it as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ultimate understanding of what the world has to go through to reach its shleimus. The world has to have people who are struggling with difficult minds. The world needs X amount of people struggling with X amount of financial distress. The world needs X amount of people struggling with these type of health problems, and they need to overcome it this way. Mazel is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's predestination of the tikkun for the world. So what makes it so difficult for us to get an instant reading on, you know, to ask, oh, why did this happen? Let's open up the solution book. It says here, if you do this, this is what happens. And okay, so we now have it. That's not. It's intertwined between the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets up to us that come from a place beyond Bechira, before Bechira, to the things that are shaykh to the world of Bechira. And nobody has, or really, unless the person has a nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, extraordinary Ruach HaKodesh, can he actually mark off the pieces and say, oh, this is this, this is this, this is this. We need to do our best. We don't have the ability to sort of judge. So we live in a world that has both mazel and hashgacha. When we look at the world above us physically, there are two things you notice. We don't notice much because the skies are usually not visible. If you have lighting today, you don't see the sky. And to me, the only time I ever had a profound experience that there actually is a world with stars outside was during the Yom Kippur War. They had a blackout, and all of the lights in Eretz Yisrael were extinguished. And at night, the war started in Yom Kippur. Starting Chol Hamoed Sukkot, out of Chavrus, I used to walk to his house in Eretz Torah. It was about a 25-minute walk. So I had no problem walking, and towards the end of the month, I used to literally have to hold on from bush to bush because there wasn't a shred of light. And then I realized the moon actually gives light, and the stars give X amount of light. And if it's cloudy, there's no star. It's actually the first time you saw it. We're not aware of it. But if you take a look at the stars, you pick up two things. There are stars that have a very gradual rotation. The same setup of the stars, they're all fixed, and they come round again and again every night. They keep moving a little bit quicker than the sun, a little bit slower, and every period of time of a month or so, a different, the sun, if we were to put the sun imaginary in the backdrop of stars, it would actually be coming from a different clump of stars. That's the first thing we notice. So we have this huge backdrop of millions of stars. They have sort of constellations that kind of in a fixed pattern. And I could see the sun as rising from a different one around the year, round and around. That's one thing. And then there are seven entities in the Shemayim that don't have any fixed place, and they just seem to go wherever they feel like. That I also noticed, and that's very strange. That's kind of weird. It's almost as if it's alive. It's everything else just moves around and around, and so on. So we have two sets of heavenly beings. One of them fixed, but rotating gradually, and one of them kind of wandering, and not very, very difficult to really plot out any type of orbit for it. Those are called what we call a planet. The word planet means a wanderer, actually, in Greek. And it's those are the only ones that were visible, the sun and the moon. Again, the planets in the sense that they wander. And then you have Mercury, Venus. The Earth doesn't count because you're on the Earth. You have Mars. You have Saturn and Jupiter. That was visible to people with minimal amount of instruments. And they would see it. They were huge. They were very different. So the message you get is there is a kavudika pattern of things that goes round and round, and that's tkufis. In other words, just like the seasons come round and round, these mazalas come round and round, and the sun rises from each mazal, and it would stand to reason that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the world that way, and why else would he have a pattern like that? I mean, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu just wanted lighting, he would have had even lighting, track lighting, kind of, and you know, and everybody was like, "Wow, look at how symmetrical this is! Wonderful!" It's not at all like that, and it also goes round and round. It has a slightly different length. It's called a sidereal day. It has a slightly different length than the sun, and therefore, you sense that the day rises from someplace else. That is the world of mazalos, like the zodiac signs. Mazel Kleh, Mazel Psula, Mazel Masnayim, and Chazal associated various phenomena, and therefore it stood to be understood that certain events would happen within certain mazalos. What about those wanderers? What about those seven heavenly entities that don't, you know, they're neither here nor there anywhere? That obviously has a much sharper personal influence. In other words, just like you have this huge amount of stars which kind of are a general hashpa, and it goes round slowly, and it changes every so often, every once a month, let's say, and then in big picture, tkufa, these wanderers change constantly, so they obviously affect individuals more. And they also are, the unit of time is a different unit. A month is a macro unit, sort of in a year. A month is a unit in a year, because that's what the big mazalas comes around. If you're talking about splitting up the smallest astronomical unit that we are conscious of naturally are hours. In other words, in the time of the Gemara, they didn't have clocks. So you could, the Gemara says, you have shalosh shos, arba shos, chamesh shos, odom toyev b'sha echad, odom toyev b'shtei shos, machlokes. In other words, an hour is a unit that's a fraction of a day, and it's a unit that's comfortable enough for a person. It's the smallest unit. A person who's living in a watch-free society, could possibly determine hours himself. Very hard. Anything less than hour, minutes is not determinable. So an hour are those small units. So the way the world understood, the way Chazal gave it to us, works as follows. You have seven entities that wander around and have their own, seem to have their own agenda. So we have 7 days of a week. So starting with the first day, on the first hour, every hour will come under the influence or marking, depending on whichever way you want to go with it, of a specific mazel, and it will give you some tag, some understanding of what the day is there for. It works out that every day starts with, you know, 7 days, seven mazalas, and you go around. Every day is going to have a different, it's going to start with a different mazel, and the day that it starts with makes sense to say that that's its dominant feature. That's the system as it's set up. Now the question is, so Chazal tagged it as such. These ideas were also very popular in Musa'olam. Not only very different than today, we take biology and we'll explain it with Inyanim Amukim, using what we know today as apropos to understanding Yad Hashem. If we understood the science correctly, we will understand some halak that HaKadosh Baruch put into it. That's natural. So Kachov Mazalos, the Rambam says that it's all nonsense. There are one or two places where he does not say that. He says they're not absolute truths, and what they know from it is vague, and very little truth in it. That's impressionizing. He does seem to give us a truth. Many of the Rishonim held that there was a truth to it. Did they have it as an exact? Was an exact science? Very, very hard to make an exact science out of it. And I don't know if we even have the astrology people had it. I doubt the stuff that you read in newspaper has any shares it. But at any rate, it either was something that there was a chachma to it that Chazal felt had truth to it, and they accept that the Goyim saw it as the root of it, and we saw it simply as a funnel or a marker. Chazal certainly felt that these inyanim had a certain emes to themselves in the panemius of it. In other words, if there's a star that looks reddish to us, which is Mars, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made big things for reasons. Red is a color of blood, it's a color of you know, violence. It has in itself certain qualities that one ought to mark off as having some shaykhs with it. How much does that affect us? We run into a problem, because whereas in the world underneath us, we're supposed to use science and human energy and effort to make changes that we do our tzvikiv shuah on every level. So there's no problem if a person goes out to the field and works hard. He's not a kaifer. The adrabba, he's you know, if he's be mekayim at tzivuv HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if a person gazes at stars, it's not pashut. On the one hand, that's what they call mazalus. You're not allowed to stare at the moon. On the other hand, the Gemara says that mechashif tkufis, and not clear if it just means for this or for mazalus also. Not clear in the practical application what we're supposed to do with it. But the concept of mazel is something which we believe in the sense that there are patterns of predestination that they not only they precede and supersede our efforts. It's at the question, just like we're surrounded by the Kochav Mazals, we're surrounded by Mazal. And it's not the result of what we did, it's rather the prelude for what we are to do. So it has applications. So the Chazal, and there were many, in the practical sense, there have been different approaches to these Chazal. Some say that Chazal felt you should be using the science of the times, and if it was understood that way, then this is what people had a chiyuv, to be careful and to do things at the right time. Just like if somebody today countermands if somebody today does something that a doctor tells him is pikuach nefesh to do, if he does it and the person does it, even if in 50 years from now they'll discover the doctor wrong, the person did a terrible aveira. Because it's, to the best of your knowledge, this was unhealthy, and to the best of your knowledge, that's what you have to work with. And your chiyuv of nishmatuman of shaseichem is a chiyuv to act that way. And therefore Chazal spelled out for us those in yanim and so on. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it, and this is the way that the Maral sort of generally looks at Gadatan, and it's sort of the cheder that I was brought up in, is that these inyanim on the chitzonius may or may not be right, but Chazal definitely felt mitzad the pnimius inyan, it is right. Now, let's give it them. I just want to give an example. It says that a person should not be makis dam when the mazel is not a good mazel for it, and so on and so forth. Hakazas dam is a process where a person begins to tamper with a body. Everybody knows hospitals are dangerous places because anytime you're opening a body, anytime you're intervening, then that is sakana be'etzem. Some procedures are a lot of sakana, some are not much sakana. But the sakana lies, like it says, a derech is sakana. There are some things that just the principle of it, a person who's not in his place is besakana. Once you've, the minute you've laid a knife to a person's body, once you've, the body is, the difference between the protection of a body that's closed to open is worlds apart. And even if it's a hospital setting with gloves and everything, opening up a body, it exposes it. So that's a makom sakana. There are zmanim that are mesukit. Our guide for when we apply these inyanim, when not, is usually what the Shacharuch brings down. That's sort of seen. So those things that the Shacharuch brings as sakana, we avoid. Those things that not, we say it was only a sakana as understood then. But there's an emes that stays with it, mitzad the pnimius of it, mitzad the tochen of it, and we need to understand it. You know, Hakazas Dami was the surgical procedure today. It was when a person opened up himself and let out blood, and that itself is fraught with sakana. There are zmanim that are the right times to do it, and there's zmanim not the right times to do it. It's not something that we can box up scientifically exactly, because it's too difficult. There's no way to do it. But it's also a mixture between mazals and other things. But at any rate, that's, I guess, an approach to understand this Chazal. So just to go over some of the points. The important nekuda from our point of view is the Ramchal, the way he sets it up in Das Tvunas, that there are two, when we look at Maase Hashem and the Bria, we look at two realms. We look at, he calls it, the Mahalach of Mazel and the Mahalach of Bechira, I believe. In other words, one is what comes to you, and by definition, that's above our understanding. We start with the result, not with beginning. We see the rain. We don't see the shoresh of it. We don't understand why the world needs that people should suffer in such a way, and people should be bewildered in such a way, and events should unfold in such a way. There's no point in thinking about it, and that's why it's called mazel. When we say fate is blind, that is a distortion of the sense of the truth. The truth is we are blind to fate. In other words, it comes to us as fate because we have no mahalach in understanding it. We weren't given the ability to understand it. We have no need to understand it. It's like when you have a geometry book and they give you a problem and it says, given that this line is like this, this line is like that, and this is true about this, prove this, this, and this. You don't, unless you're really bored, you don't sit and say, why did they give us a triangle like that? Like, where did that triangle come from? Like, I wonder where he thought about this. I mean, it's maybe new age geometry, but it's certainly not productive geometry. Given. Now, from this point start, we live, and that given to us, it has a physical representation, and that's the Shemaim around us. It's the reason we say unabashedly that the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created so many olamos and so on and so forth, is for man. And the only thing that we seem to have is some sort of hashpa, looking at it, seeing it, noticing things, being bewildered by it, being overcome by it, and being humbled by it. All of those are appropriate reasons. That's the world of mazel. And then you have the world of schar and onesh, which is sort of a feedback from our maisim, and the reality is a tremendous intertwining of the two in a way that we can discern it. There are in yanim in we believe for those shitas and rishonim that believe there is truth in mazalos, they felt that the goyim spotted these things, had some insight into it. There are truths. There's plenty of nonsense also, but there certainly are truths in it. You notice sometimes, even large bars, you know, there'll be years when, like, there'll be tremendous, there'll be tons of high-performing students, and there'll be years when it's very schwach. You know, sometimes it's a statistical fluke. Sometimes you wonder, you know, is there some sort of hashgacha about a tkufa? I mean, we take a look, the gedolim that we had, Tol Chaznish and Biskarov, the type of works that were produced from the Chaznish Biskarov going back 100 years before is unparalleled. And it's unparalleled before, almost. And it's certainly not, there's very little that can explain the difference. There was Hashkacha. I mean, the Ragachov, the Sfasemis, Reb Chaim, the Rav, Reb Chaim Oizer, where? I mean, and go back another 50 years, Rissol, Reb Shlomo Shlomo Hirsch. There hasn't been a tkufa like that in Kaisel. Is it a fluke? Is it a tkufa? Is it a hashkacha? I don't know. It doesn't. We don't have to have answers. Just to notice. At least look up and Umar Menecha. The mazalos come in two types. What Chazal call mazalos are of two types. There are all the stars and heavenly bodies, namely entities, which are fixed, and they go in a slow pattern. And then there's the smaller mazalos, which are the planets, and those. What they say to us is there are real sharp changes. Flukes, completely bewildering, seemingly disconnected, and that applies. Large groups of people tend to have a general hashgacha. People themselves seem to be very, there's big differences. The unit of time that it would apply to would be much smaller units, and that gave us the concept of mazalos on hourly basis, which over a week, 7 mazalos, you've gone through the whole cycle. That's I guess as good as I can, get out of Gemara. That's an approach understanding some of the practical parts of it, some of the tochen of it. Okay.